Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Thank you for joining us today, and welcome back. As we discussed in a previous show, the most complex structures that science has discovered are those of life itself. Even a simple organism has a more exquisite design than a star or a galaxy or even the universe itself. And today we're going to explore the world of honeybees with conservation biologist Dr. Reese Halter. Dr. Reese has a PhD from the University of Melbourne. He received the President's Distinguished Service Award from Humboldt State University and the Gold Medal Award for Conservation from the Daughters of the American Revolution. He is the host of Dr. Reese's Planet on Time Warner and PBS Television, and is also the founder of Global Forest Science and author of The Incredible Honeybee and the Economics of Pollination. So, Dr. Reese, how come you managed to become so excited about honeybees?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show, Robert. The honeybee is our unsung hero. You know, humans and honeybees have been inexorably linked since prehistoric times. As a matter of fact, you know, the humble honeybee, and they're so exquisite. Up until humans found honeybees, there was nothing sweet that we as a species knew on the planet. So the early honey hunters, and there are marvelous petroglyphs in Western Europe and in Australia and in Southeast Asia that show the rituals that were associated with raiding the beehives in the wild. And I'm going to tell our listeners that those people, those men mostly, but I've seen that some pictographs that look like women on cave walls were beyond brave. These were intrepid individuals, very likely shamans, very likely in a trance, because they had to get, first of all, up the tree or the cliff, and then they had to rip into the hive and face the onslaught of thousands of bee stings to get the honeycomb rich with honey and bring it back down to the tribe or their family.
That sounds incredibly painful.
Oh, unbelievable. That's why I say they were quite likely shamans. And they were in a trance. Some, I understand, realized quite early on that smoke, which is, apart from everything else, filled with carbon monoxide, makes them much more dozier. So some, I imagine, figured that they carried burning branches to the hive to try and pacify them, even though, of course, when the raider smashed into the hive, pacified or not, the bees would rip into them with their stingers.
Hmm. Amazing.
Yeah.
And so what is the characteristic of honey that makes it so wonderful?
Well, honey is a beautifully sweet solution that comes from flowers, and it's the nectar, and it's an interesting dance in nature. There's so many intricate links, but about 120 million years ago, most of the plants then were relied on the wind to take the pollen and move it to the next tree or the next plant so they could cross-pollinate, you see, and grow their seeds. And about 120 million years or so ago, the first insects or the first honeybees evolved on our planet, and a new form of life called an angiosperm. Prior to that, the conifers, or what most people would call Christmas trees, grew cones, and the cones were, when the cone opened, a naked seed would fall to the ground. The cones and their precursors were cross-pollinated by the wind. Angiosperms relied on sexy, scrumptilicious smelling flowers to attract a variety of insects, but primarily the honeybee, to move the pollen from one flower to the next. How did they do that? Well, they had to make it beneficial for the honeybee, and they made it beneficial with a sweet, syrupy nectar. So the bee would collect nectar and take it back to the hive, and with an incredible process that they evolved with, they were able to process the nectar within their body and turn it into honey. Now, honey is to a honeybee what electricity is to a human, energy. And the amount of energy that honey packs is phenomenal. And it is rocket fuel for both the insect and the human being. It's low on the glycemic index, which means that people with diabetes can have honey and can co-process honey. It is a phenomenal treat. Who do you know who doesn't like honey on their toast?
Yeah, it's marvelous. And I think you say in your book that it's something like 9 times more calories per gram than apples, and more than 10 times as many as oranges. And
well, that's why I refer to it and others as rocket fuel. It is a wonderful substance, and it's been treasured literally over the ages. The pharaohs knew about it. The Sumerians knew about it. The Akkadians knew about it. All of our peoples knew about it. In fact, the first alcoholic drink, I'm told, which is called mead, was made from honey. And several thousand years ago, I believe that the first culture that really saw the bee for more than its sweet, scrumptilicious honey and its mead capacity were the Mayans. The Mayans of Middle America realized very early on that the bees were crucial in cross-pollinating plants, and one of the highest orders bestowed to the top shaman was the beekeeper, and the beekeeper shaman kept the hives close by to each of the villages, and they, of all the ancient peoples, seem to have a very close and important understanding of the bees. And when the first colonists, 1,000-plus years, maybe 1,500 years later, came to America, they brought bees, and it's a very interesting dance that resulted in the honeybee. We can trace its origin back to Africa, and there are a number of species of honeybees, but they all came from Africa. And in the late 1800s, early 1900s, late 1800s, we chose to go with one particular species. It's the Italian honeybee, and the Italian honeybee is global. It is used in every nation on planet Earth. And the importance of the honeybee is inexorably linked to our daily activities. They provide over 90 different crop plants. As a matter of fact, the next time you eat any meal, every third bite at least is as a result of honeybees cross-pollinating and enabling the plant or the fruit to exist. And we've got a situation today where in the last 3 years, at least 50 billion, but maybe more, honeybees have died en masse. And this is a real, very serious problem, Robert.
Reese, 50 billion honeybees have died. Is this in the United States or worldwide?
It's worldwide, and it's been an issue that was first really brought to the public's attention with a 60 Minutes a documentary in 2007. And interestingly, Robert, it typifies when something happens on planet Earth that has to do with human beings, we are extremely good at blaming. We are professional blame artists.
We certainly are, yes.
The second thing after
if you can't blame someone, why talk about it?
It's a smoking gun because,
right.
Oh, darn it, there, you know, if there's blame, there's a smoking gun. I'm going to trace that sucker back.
Right. Let me ask you.
Reality in biology is good luck in finding one smoking gun.
I see.
Because nature is interconnected.
It's a little more complicated than just one
Absolutely.
Smoking gun, yeah. You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net. I am your host, Robert Piccioni, and today we are talking about the world of honeybees with Dr. Reese Halter. We'll be right back after these messages.
Explore Dr. Piccioni's website, GuideToTheCosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts that are available to you, our radio audience. Robert's first book, Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, makes the exciting discoveries of modern physics, astronomy, and cosmology understandable for everyone. And it was just selected as the best science book of the year by National Best Books. As Robert says, you don't have to be a great musician to appreciate great music, and the same is true for science. If you can change money, you can understand Einstein. Robert's second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident?, describes how precisely tuned the universe is to support life, and shows how amazingly improbable that is. Go to Robert's website and send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows. That's GuideToTheCosmos.com.
We're back talking about honeybees with Dr. Reese Halter. And before our break, we were talking about the catastrophic demise of 50 billion honeybees.
Well, of the 50 billion that have died in the last couple of years, I mean, what fraction is that of the total bee population? I mean, is that half or something?
It's a significant number that in order to sound off the alarm bells.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 100 plus years ago, and even sooner, when the coal miners went down deep into the earth, they took canaries, live canaries, in cages. Why? Did they want to hear the chirps because they were sad or they needed light? No. They had the birds in the cages because if noxious fumes, lethal fumes, were emitted and the birds died first, the coal miners soon came to realize that if they didn't get out of the shafts, they would be next.
Mm.
The epic bee death that has happened in the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years on planet Earth, some, including myself, have likened it to the modern-day canaries in the coal mine. And we know that it is a number of factors that have driven the bees into a very serious condition. One is that we are over pesticiding and over herbiciding and over fungiciding and miticiding our planet to death. How much? Pesticides, herbicides, miticides, and fumicides are we using each year? Well, we are putting 5 billion gallons of poisons onto our globe each year. How much is 5 billion? It's an inconceivable number to me, and I deal in numbers. 5 billion would be the equivalent of loading 100-pound sacks of toxic poison and lining them up, and they would encircle the entire globe. That's what we're doing each year.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these poisons, they're neonicotinoids. Neonicotinoids are nerve poisons. And very, very simply, if you or I sat down and had a bite to eat of neonicotinoids, we would develop very quickly Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. There's one form of neonicotinoid in particular that is very disturbing. The company that makes aspirin, Bayer, produces a chemical called Gaucho and Poncho. Gaucho and Poncho were brought on into Europe in the late 90s, and millions, tens of millions of bees in France died immediately. The French government had the good sense after 4 or 5 years of seeing their bees die to ban this substance. Gaucho and Poncho are being used like crazy in the United States of America and elsewhere. These are poisons that are killing the bees. Now, when the bees die, we cannot cross-pollinate our plants. Cannot cross-pollinate our plants, we cannot eat. Big problem. That, so the pesticides are first and foremost on my hit list. The second thing is, we've got these bees, these wonderful honeybees, so overworked, Robert, that we load them on tractor trailers, semis, and the bee business is a difficult business for the beekeeper to make a living just being on his land. So he rents his hives out, and they travel the nation. They follow the crops. So we start, let's say, in Florida in the early spring, and we wind up in Maine, where there's massive blueberries and cranberries that require pollination. Then we run across the nation, maybe to Kansas or the Dakotas, and we pollinate a bunch of beautiful grains and alfalfas and clovers that are necessary for our dairy industry. Then we run down and do some goldenrod in the fall, because that goldenrod is one of the last massive flowerings that makes honey. And then we run our semi over to California, where, amongst other things, we have the largest almond crop produced on planet Earth. 1.5 billion pounds of almonds are produced every year. In order to accomplish this feat, we put hundreds of millions of bees to work in the spring, and then after they've cross-pollinated, we run them back to Texas, and they're on some sort of wicked circuitry. Now, it's not bad enough that the poor bees are jammed around the nation on a fast track, like a NASCAR, as it were. Do you know we don't even allow the poor critters to eat honey, the food that they evolved with? We're feeding them high fructose and corn syrups. And long story short, with the poisons of the pesticides and with the high fructose and corn syrup and no honey, their autoimmune systems are breaking down, and they're weak, and they're susceptible to all sorts of diseases. And there are a truckload of diseases out there that are in our nation and worldwide. And then, unfortunately, you bring the hammer down, and you bring in climate change. And I know the listeners are going to say, oh, no, here we go with the climate change. Very real. The climate change deal is quite a dance when you get right down to the old bee. Bees derive their only source of protein. You know, the protein is what we eat, like in a good old steak or some chicken or some fish or soybean if you're a vegetarian. The bee has to get all its protein from pollen. As we know, the nectar is the primary source to make honey, and while some of the bees are out collecting nectar, others are out collecting pollen. They bring the pollen back.
They have different bees going after different things?
They're in the hive, yeah. The forager bee has a gig where some go for nectar, some go for pollen, some go for water. We got a drink, they got a drink. And some go for tree resin to make an incredible substance called propolis, an antifungal, antibacterial property they insulate their hive with. But the deal is, once they get the pollen, all pollen is encircled or encased by silica, and the bee uses a special good bacteria in its gut and in its stomach and its intestine to break down the silica casing to get at the pollen because it has protein. In 2006 and 2007, with some very searing temperatures, the real bee onslaught in the last several years of very high temperatures, we found, long story short, that the pollen was sterile. It had no protein content. So when the poor old bee, unbeknownst to it, collected its pollen, took it back to the hive, ripped off, was able to get the silica, get into its prize, the pollen, make its what's called bee bread, which is pollen and honey, and feed its young, it was actually feeding it no protein. Protein is crucial for growing bodies, brains, and autoimmune systems, to name a few things. Without that, you ain't going to be healthy. If you took away protein out of the human diet, we wouldn't survive very long either. So there's a combination of that. And then lastly, we're beating up our soils so badly with using liquid fertilizers that the plants that we're growing are not near as strong and healthy and vibrant as in the natural system. So we've got the bees that were initially designed, evolved, to feed on a wide assortment of pollen. So just in case, just like in life, if one avenue doesn't work, you turn around and go down another avenue to follow your pursuit. If you take away all of the kinds of assortments of pollen which we have from the bees and put them on a monoculture plantation of whatever we're trying to get cross-pollinated, and all of that plant has been affected and has sterile pollen with no protein content, you don't have to be a rocket scientist here to see what the end is.
Yeah.
And the bees are dying. So the good news is we've identified this, so we know. The good news is that beekeepers have come up with their own formula of eggs. It's like a protein shake, eggs and brewer's yeast and honey and a little bit of pollen. We hope that it's got some protein in and a special ingredient, and they're trying to nurse these bees back into some shape.
Well,
here's the good news, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
We need good news. Good news, the fastest growing sector in the United States of America is organics. It did $24 billion in commerce last year. Projections are even higher for this year. Here's the good thing. There are a lot of blue chip companies who've got everything at stake here. We've got General Mills that owns Häagen-Dazs, 50% of the ice cream that people enjoy, 50% of the ingredients is bee pollinated. Häagen-Dazs is on the hook. Starbucks, 100% of their coffee's on the hook. They get it. We got Clorox bought Burt's Bees. Burt's Bees is a personal specialty company that has 150 products. It's growing at an incredible year-over-year 25 to 30% rate of return and growth by this little boutique. It was once upon a little boutique company, not any longer. They depend on the bees. People understand, so there's a lot of good things happening. First Lady Michelle Obama has, for the second time in the history of the United States of America, we have a garden. FDR had the Victory Garden on the White House lawn. First Lady Michelle Obama has the second garden. It's the first organic garden, and and Robert, right next to her organic garden, are two beehives.
Beehives. Wonderful. We should save the bees because they are, after all, a creature of nature, and we shouldn't be destroying everything in nature. But as you point out in your book, there's an economic incentive to doing so as well.
$44 billion each year, and that's a very, very, very conservative estimate of number in the United States of America.
$44 billion.
Food or where any cotton products or enjoy honey or burn a candle or take medicines, you've got something at stake. And I will make this as succinctly as possible. If the bees go, we go. And that's it. It is a matter of survival.
Okay, so you're suggesting that there is hope here because companies are learning that they can do good and make money.
Yes, sir.
So that's a strong incentive and a great way to promote the good works of life is to find the economic advantages that companies and individuals can gain by doing the right thing. And that's one of the key things that's in your book.
Yes.
You're not just saying that honeybees are very nice creatures that we should preserve, but you're pointing out the economics of why that's critical for our society to do it.
And I carry it one step further. The step is this. The way forward is not to reinvent the wheel, Robert. Mm-hmm. Reinventing the wheel is expensive, it's time-consuming, and it's wasteful.
Mm-hmm.
The way forward is to observe nature, observe all of nature's blueprints, and emulate those blueprints. And there are hundreds and hundreds of businesses and products that are currently doing that. With the bees, it becomes even more important because we cannot make a living, we cannot exist on this planet if our friends, the honeybees, aren't healthy and cross-pollinating our plants.
Well, amen. Okay, so we need to wrap up, and I want to thank Dr. Reese Halter for joining us today and enlightening us about honeybees, what marvelous creatures they are, and how economically essential they are to our own survival as people. You can get a lot more information on Dr. Reese and his activities by going to his website. That's drreese.com, spelled D-R for doctor, and Reese is R-E-E-S-E. So drreese.com. And his book is coming out very shortly. It's a great book. I had the privilege of seeing an advanced copy. It's called The Incomparable Honeybee and the Economics of Pollination, and that's going to be available on Amazon.com, and you said also Barnes & Noble
and Borders. On your website. True.
Borders, okay, great. So it'll be easy for anybody to get a copy, and thank you again, Dr. Reese, for joining us.
Whoops. Ooh. Thanks very much.
Well, that's a good close.
All right, thanks, man.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You can find out more about Dr. Reese on his website, drreese.com. That's drreese.com. And there you can find out more information about his new book, The Incomparable Honeybee. Join us again next week when we explore Einstein's most famous equation, E equals mc squared. What does this equation mean? And how can this equation lead us to develop energy that is clean, cheap, and abundant, and doesn't destroy our planet? Thank you for tuning in, and remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Goodbye.